I grew up until I was at the age of 9, and then all our lads left home. There were 10 of us in family, and the father had about a 50-acre farm there, and it was all on his own. So we moved up and bought a shop in a place called Ballycumber in County Offaly, and that was a famous place for Shears Armstrong's house, which still exists there
Yeah.
in County Offaly. Now, Brian Cowan comes from Clara. You know Brian, you do,
I
of
do,
course.
I
He's
do,
the
yes.
tallest. I know Brian well. I knew his family, the whole family. And I went to school. They went to school in Ballycumber for a few years. Then I joined the Brothers in Ballyfin. So I did my secondary there, of course. Then I went to the university in Galway. I did diplomas and all that other things. And eventually, I did science, archaeology, you name it, there. And I met all the gods, the great educators there in Galway University. After that, I moved around a bit, as all teaching brothers do. And eventually, I left and I got a principal's job in County Cavan. And I wanted to come to Dublin because I was interested in music. So I got this job in the Oblate. Now, it consisted mostly of Kerry men. So, I mean, the last man, the man I replaced actually was a Kerry man, O'Sullivan, and he was there for 18 years. Now, he was only a youngster, so to speak. So, they were up actually one night in the teachers' club. And there was somebody had left or retired from the Oblate School, and Tom Flaherty, one of the Kerry men as well. And Tom said, "Did you all hear that?" This is, by the way, you know, the Mount Kerry men. There was an unusual thing. He said there was a vacancy, he said, advertised in the Oblate School in Jacor. And one of the men said, "Oh, a Kerry man will get that." And this fellow said, "No, a Carr Savine man will get it." So they're great characters. But
What year was that?
that was 1956, the year Ronnie Delaney got
The gold
the
medal.
1800
Yeah.
metres. Our fellow actually went to America. He was an athlete as well. And he spent his time there, got all his degrees there in America.
But going back to the Oblate, was that an interesting place to be
A
in the early days?
very interesting place. That's where they made the railway coaches. And we'll go back a little bit, well, theologically, if you like. In 1854, it was the year of the promulgation of the dogma of the Immaculate Conception. And 4 years afterwards, a girl called Subiru was collecting sticks. And funny enough, she asked the lady who she was, and she said, "I am the Immaculate Conception." 4 years after the, and she wouldn't have a clue what that was about. No wonder. Now, I'm putting this down here. In 1858, the Oblates built the first church there and had a small school. The first church was actually made of wood, and the railway workers put it together in 36 hours. It followed up by a beautiful, you probably know, do you, in Chicor.
No, you could describe it to me, yeah.
Well, I taught there every day, you
But
know,
what was it like?
came home.
Yeah.
We had actually, well, the school I was in was a new school that was built in 1936. It has a granite front. It would have been a very modern school, parquet floors, and upstairs and all that kind of thing in it.
Where did you live at the time?
Well, that's before I got married. Now, just a small. I lived here. We're here since 1964. We bought this house actually. We bought us. I saw this go up from the foundations.
Yeah.
And there was they're all and I was in charge of the my brothers were nearly all builders, you know. And I was on the the Residents Association, and I had to look at all the, that was a task I got, and I got different floors. Now the floors actually were electrified, they were, they had electricity based heat.
Oh, was that a new concept at the time?
It was, and it was very badly adapted, you know, to the needs of, or to the knowledge, let's say, of the building people at that time. So we had to get most of them up again.
But finally, you settled down here, and yeah, the houses were built,
and we had.
And did you commute in and out to
work? Oh yeah. Now I taught fellas actually from the middle of the dual carriageway down in Knockmitten.
Yeah.
You know, did down you? In the middle of the road. Yeah. And we concentrated actually on choral work and all that. And I don't like, I'm not actually trying to boast, but I put the Oblate business on the papers. I started developing Piagetian mathematical, that's what I got an honorary degree for actually, primary school thing. And I spent, I suppose, altogether 30 years on that. And I still kept at it, but I'm still at it actually. So I'd say it was, I went to most, went to all actually the teacher centres in Ireland. I gave the first metrication and decimalisation lectures in UCD in 1970 or 1969, and made my own devices or whatever you call contraptions for transferring from one to another, money to the old money to the new money, you know, the other went on there, you know.
And you travelled all over the country?
Although I was in every teacher centre in Ireland, including Tralee and Kilorgle and those. I was in Mayo, Galway, Navan, both at secondary and
how many years did it take you to cover all that?
I did in a couple of years.
Did you?
I was paid actually. Now I produced my material and it went to England and went to Australia and America, and the educational company actually paid for me to go around Ireland and paid for me to, the top class hotels. I told them I didn't want a B&B doing me. But anyway, that's the kind, that's how they waste money, you know.
Yes.
And then that was developed actually by an idea that they wanted somebody up near Sheriff Street in Dublin here, you know, to develop this idea of local education, so to speak, you know, bring it in. So that's what I gave them the stuff to do that. And then,
Where did the idea for that come from?
I always had it. My grandfather was a well-known mathematician, and my lots of cousins, teachers, and all that. And I always did this in school. Now dissension I ever had with an inspector was over maths. You know,
you didn't agree with him.
No, because the new idea of Jean Piaget, who was the, you know, he was a Franco-Swiss genius for basing the child-centered educational thing. You know, that the kids should be manipulative. He has five senses, not just one or two, listening, and that we haven't improved on the idea of getting. This whole mathematical concept. If I've loads of stuff inside, if you want to see them.
I'm sure you have a room full of stuff there.
I have.
But I mean, so you're engrossed in this work.
Oh, totally. I've actually written two histories as well.
Have you?
Yeah. I've written a history of.
But do you think it all stemmed from your? What was your grandfather's name?
Mike Devine. Himself and his brother were the only one in his family, and he was quite a historian as well. And I'd say he would have been. I would class him as a farmer and a merchant, both. He had shops. And when he had 10 in his family, and he gave a shop to every one of them, or else that married into shops. So they were all tied up with shops in Loughrea and Port Dumna, Tina, and all this. This is the Harlan country now we're talking about. And I had a first cousin, Father Connie Boyle, hurled for Galway in minor, junior, and senior. And he was ordained for Canada, and he got pleurisy and got pneumonia and died actually before he could go. And he was alive. He was a terrific fella. He was a great hurler as well.
Did you meet with any opposition when you went around as to, you know, this new theory coming in of changing over
no,
the
No, I did
system?
Not. They were delighted to get it. You know, there was always this little bit of how do we get around it? Because you had the curriculum set as you have now, and it sounds funny to see a whole lot of young fellas looking into a little hole like that and some ideas coming out of it instead of looking working the thing out. I would have
Are
some...
you referring to a computer, is it?
Yeah, I am. Now, the computer, actually, from my idea of education, it's visual. But you are trying, actually, to inculcate, which isn't a good word, actually. Education is a word that's hammered around, you know, call it what you like. And everything ends up in education. And nobody has quite defined it. It's like faith. They can't define it. You know, it's too wide. It depends on your intelligence, you know, and all this. And you've got to cater for the individual gifts that God gave people. Some people, a kid of... Now, I see somebody, in fact, in senior infants, and I used to say to the teacher that was in charge of all this, come, you send me those kids, don't tell me anything about them. I'll tell you. And then you tell me if I'm right or wrong. You from your... That's fair enough. I would give them the whole idea in mathematics, for example, of other things done as well. You have conservation of area. No matter how I cut that piece of paper and re-put it together, the new shape would always have the same area as that. No matter how you shape it or reshape it. I'm sure you one device I have now that I did recently. And this whole idea, like, you can make a triangle out of that.
Yeah.
You know, you can
yes,
do that.
Yes,
no,
yes,
no
yes.
problem.
So,
or I can make a rectangle out of it, you know, and put it lengthwise and all that.
Yeah.
And say, now, if and then that's called conservation of area. Now, I was in school one day, I go in now and again, and the newly, I know them all from Patsy, I know them in all the colleges in Ireland, actually. But the teacher was teaching area and perimeter. And there are two different things, of course. There's a perimeter, right? And the area is how many squares inside in that. If you took a unit, an inch, let's say, in square inches. Now, if I have a square of 5 by 5, the area is 25.
Yeah.
But the perimeter is 5, 5, 5, 5. That's 20. Do you get it?
I do indeed.
Now, it's very simple. Now, I have a device for showing you as they go along. But that's the area is 25. But if you had brick heads, now you must practicalize this whole idea, where it's going and how it's applied. We're applying nothing to life instead of 5 by 5 is 25. Well, you could say it's 24, just for the argument. Who cares? Do you get it?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We had to be realistic and applied. But
how do you? I mean, how do you see then? You grew up and with no modern communications, no computer, no
learning tables. And the more practical you are, the better.
Well, that was my question. How do you find the introduction of the new, say, the way of calculating figures, the way of we can do it in a split second now without any difficulty, and it's always going to be absolutely correct.
Well, is it? You have computers breaking down, haven't you? And I've been in shops, actually, where the electricity went down, they hadn't a clue how to do a bill. We are working actually in a vacuous kind of situation. I worked in ancient things called polytopes. They're inside there, you can have them. They're cubes and all this kind of thing, and how they're done. But we say, oh, there are only five regular solids, no more, no less. That's okay. You can understand that mathematically. But there are other features about it that I have discovered. I don't know if they've ever been discovered, because you have situations there in Google. You know Google and the.
You can Google anything nowadays, yes.
Yeah, Google, and you can find out all that are done. My problem today is I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to. You get it? But you can discover or rediscover, whichever is the correct term, but you don't know whether they have been discovered or not.
In previous
Yeah,
time.
you don't really know. Nobody knows who made. Now, the world has made tremendous advancement in mathematics. Absolutely. And we have all these, now show you a new way of multiplying and all that. But as you say, you can do it. Well, bringing your computer around isn't the handiest way to work anyway. But you must understand what's coming out of this. Anyway, I started by telling you that I went into school, and this young fellow at the bottom, everything went fine for them. He said to come up and if I go into the school, he said, come up and do some maths. I said, all right, well, I spent an hour and forget time is passing by, And everything turned out, and this fellow put up his hand and said, miss, he said, they're all women now, How is it that you have a different perimeter for this, or you have the same perimeter for this as you have for some other thing? How did that? Because now he was practicalizing, if you like, the whole idea of perimeter and area. Let's say if you got brickheads, and assuming that is a two-dimensional or flat kind of thing, that you're dealing. If you're able to, which you are, you're able to tie them with 20 inches of twine will tie 25 squares together, just as you look at them. But I said to him, I could take one out of that, and it is still tighten them. And I could take four, and I could take nine, I could take 16 out of that, and still they'd be tight, they won't get. And he said, how would you do that? That's what the young fellow, the teacher, was totally stumped. I said, I go home and I'll do a thing for you. So I came on home and I eventually did a thing. And it shows actually as you slip this up and down. I got a fellow across the road actually who works. He works in cabinet making, cutting out, and you couldn't, these things dovetail into one another as you go up, and you can't even see the light through them. They're so well done. There's where the computer comes in. It proves actually the unprovable kind of situations,
Yes.
but it doesn't either instigate them or discover or rediscover them. Do you
Yeah.
get it? The mind was still the computer, in other words, is only as good as how as we feed it. You'll only get answers to what you put in.
Being a mathematical genius,
I'm not a genius.
but having the great ability to be able to work out,
Well, that's teaching, you see.
yes,
You see.
I well, that's my question. Applying that to the student or teaching somebody,
Yeah.
that's another matter.
No problem. Because there'd be no virtue in what I'm doing unless it is plain to the person who saw it. And you can't in actual fact explain how I did this, except you see it, you're looking at it. Say, oh, you're right. God, you got. Because this whole thing moves, of course, but you can see actually what's happening. Anybody would understand this.
How many years have you been teaching?
I've been teaching for 45 years.
And you've been teaching all these riddles and
Oh,
ways of doing things,
yeah.
but in all the time learning yourself,
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
sure.
of course. Yeah, you find ideas, especially in a problem. Somebody starts there's a problematic thing. How do you get over this, or how do you bypass it, or do you now your centerpieces in these big houses, and you have a thing called a trommel, which is a very old kind of gadget for doing this, and you get you can get circles, or you can get other kind of shapes for these ellipses, or you know, you can get, and it's not, you won't do it where you have a stuck kind of, or a fixed radius. But in this, now take the new coin, the 50 penny piece. In that, in actual fact, you have a fixed, what would I call it? Now, how do I, see this done? It has seven sides, you know that, pentagonal, you know the 50.
I do, yes.
Yeah. Now, if you look at that and see, it's a conundrum, because it started as a circle and it ends up as, but the sides are not straight, they're actually curved. Do you get it?
Yes.
And you have seven of those. Now, you had to work that as a circle to start with, but when you end up, the radius is not fixed, because that was made actually to go into a machine, and you have two parallel lines here, and you feed it into the machine, and the thing bumps up and down once it gets, do you get it? But the diameter, call it, there is a middle in it, but it's not regular, it's moving. You don't notice that in the kind at all. And the whole thing was to make sure there's no fella. You imagine, I did numismatism as well, that's a study of coins. The earlier coins, circles and all this, they used to be spun around by these gold and silver merchants, and they used to get the dust of those, and they'd end up a little bagging of them, you see, and we put out into circulation afterward, and the coins began to get smaller and smaller, and then they said something wrong, and the time of Charles II, there was a man hanged because he was caught actually, and the guys got their heads together and said, we'll have to do something at this to get this idea in time, because there could be a long time at this before you notice it. So they got this thing called milling, you know, it's the little things that go around it. That's called milling.
Okay, yes. You know? And that gives it its shape.
So the, no, it doesn't. No, it keeps the thing from being cut away, because the minute it starts, you can see the thing. And they demonetize it, they put it in put it into a thing.
It stops it, yeah.
They'll issue a new coin for it, and they'll redo a new coin out of the order.
So that's how coinage, and there's a whole interesting...
Now, if you send me a coin in, you say, what's wrong with that now? It's a genuine coin. They have parallel lines here, and they put the coin in a groove, and it's magnetized, you see, and once it's touching the bottom and touching the top, the light keeps going. But if the light goes off, there's something wrong with the coin, and just take note of.
So it's fascinating, isn't it?
So all this goes in actually to living, but people don't know. Well, not to people, but it's not enough. Say that's a shilling. Now, that's a sixpence. But I have all kinds of coins upstairs, and they had various values. The silver and the gold. Actually, they brought in the gold actually from circulation in 1931. The gold. And the pound sterling was sterling silver, which was worth the pound. But the pound is on the Lake Jack's pip, sorry.
Yes. Yeah.
You see, it was only a promissory note, but the coin is the important thing. And the notes are brought in, a note will last about 5 months, and a coin lasts longer, but the coin disappears, you know, and the value of the coin is in its make up for it, whether it's gold or silver.
But in medieval times, they used to quarter the coin. Started with a shilling, and it literally cut it
They can
in four quarters, and use that as coinage.
Actually, they used all kinds of things. They used gun money here.
During the battle of the Boyne.
Right.
Talk to me now. We could be talking about
this forever. That's what I say. You could be here all day.
But I want to move on in your life. Not only were you interested and studied, you're interested in everything.
And I fell in digging out.
Talk to me about the place you're living in, Clondalkin, the village itself.
Well, now, Clondalkin is a very early monastic settlement. Christianity came to Ireland long before St. Patrick, of course, because people came from different countries and they were Christian, you see. And the same thing happened to England. And I'd say most of that came across from England to Ireland as well. And we have the Benedictine place in Glastonbury in England. You know that, do you?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, our Lord and Joseph of Arimathea, the story goes that Joseph of Arimathea and Lazarus, he was a very rich man, Lazarus was. I was at his grave, actually. I was in the Holy Land. I spent a while there, too. So I was in Lazarus's grave, and now he was a very rich man, and Joseph Arimathea. They used to bring over our Lord as a young fella over to Glastonbury. Glastonbury was after it got built, it was destroyed Henry VIII's time, about 1539, I think it was. He sent his dogs with hatchets and they chopped off the walls and all this. And the first, you know, when he wanted to go over the monasteries and all that. And he sent all his characters there and his scouts say, are they keeping the rule? And if they weren't, he'd be able to knock off the gold and all the stuff they had, you know. But they said, go back to him and say, no, they're keeping it perfectly. So then he set up there and gave your man choppers and hatchets and chopped the thing off, so he destroyed the place. Right?
Yeah, but talk to me about the monastery that was set up here then.
Now, very hard, like, to get a date for a monastery. It obviously started by people coming from England and Wales, maybe, or from, like, as it happened in reverse when Cillian and Columba went to Iona, you know, and Cillian went actually to Germany and so on, that it kind of went round in a circular way, and you had Ciarán of Clonmacnoise, and you had St. Kevin here. Now, St. Kevin actually was in Glendalough, and then Glendalough actually had the effect. It had control actually over this place, obviously, because it had all the hallmarks. Now, accompanying this, the most interesting part of all this is the man called Machua. And this place is called Clondalkin, or Clondalkin, or Dalkin's Meadow. Now, very hard to know where Dalkin, he probably, it was only a sound, somebody picked him up. But there was an old fella here, and he had some ideas, and he said, Clondalkin is the meadow, Clúin is meadow, you know that, of course. Are you an Irish speaker, are you?
Just couple of fuckle, you know, that's
no, all. No, it's more than a couple of fuckle, because it's not thinking to a page,
sure.
But this old man used to say, Clondalkin, it is Clúin on the Cháin. It is the meadow.
Dalkin, the meadow, coin, yes.
Of the two taxes. Cáin is a tax.
Yes.
There's two gentlemen. Of course, the meadow at that time meant nothing, well, probably important. But these two, according to him, are kind of just folklore, but there's a basis to it. More so than Clondalkin, Dalkins. Dalkin doesn't make any. But anyway, he had these two characters of the who claimed this meadow. And they ended it up like Conor the Hundred Battles and Maanuth Lango over the Eskers, you know, the Eskers between Galway and Sleeve Ore, you know, went down a lot. I did a book down there as well. And Where was I?
You were talking about the, you know,
the two, yeah.
Was it they divided the
they'd have control over this,
yes,
and instead of cutting the meadow in two, you took one part, and the people who had this area paid me a coinage, what do you call it, keys. And you, on the other hand, took the keys from these people over here. And you had these small little areas, and they would have been moot ditches, you know, a ditch that be built. And that's all you'd find out. A man called O'Brien did the neighbourhood of Clondalkin here. And he had all these little corners with different names. And then Peter Duff did one in 1703. And this brings it up actually to the big place I wrote a book on.
The early civilization here, were there traces of ring forts or standing of?
No, we go way back, It was noted actually here that Clondalkin was a walled village of some standing back in 630.
Had this something to do with the monastery?
It probably had. It most probably had, because the monastery would be central to all this, right? But if you get into this, the monastery was actually attacked by Danes. And we come into the Round Towers now. And the Ireland, apart from the Isle of Man and some other place, I think, is the only place we find these Round Towers. And the big argument there, what were they for? It was obvious that there were some protective place to hold the jewels of the monks or the scripts. You know, there was back actually in Germany, there's a place, well, I forget the name of it now. And they have accounts taken from bits of a book with Clondalkin written on them. So they've had probably a scriptorium as well here. That was an integral part. Now, how important they'd be would depend on what they contained in terms of history and local chiefs and all that. But now we come actually to how things got their names. Clondalkin, Machoda. The tower actually was cylindrical in nature, towers are, and then they're capped by a conic hat, you know. But Clondalkin Tower isn't like that. It is a lot of mortar and all that kind of stuff at the bottom of it. And it has no mortar, actually, as far as we know, keeping the stones together, which are common, limestone, if you like. And it goes up for about 10 feet, and then it began to go in a bit. Now, if you try conically to get a tower, you'll find that they're truncated cones.
Yes.
Or else cylinders that would make any difference, and then they could cap it anyway. But the one at Clondalkin actually obviously was a conic kind of building where you'd normally have it and should be going in. Now, how high, where, what actually governs the rate of peaking?
Well, it had to peak at obviously at some stage, but it would peak very, very
Your problem is to know when it does and keep the centre of gravity right. Mm-hmm. Because that goes in the middle, and you can't push a spike up. And you could do that if you could. I don't know how that I've got up there that way. Yeah. It's about 84 feet high and about 52 feet in circumference. That's at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Now, there was supposed to have been, and there's no date for this actually, two earthquakes that not destroyed it, but upset it here in Clondalkin way back medieval times. And that could have interrupted or upset the whole kind of thing, and they could have tried to rebuild it, as they obviously did, because what you call the rocks that are down the bottom are actually to consolidate the ground and help the stability of the place itself.
And at that stage, then, would there have been a lot of traffic coming in to
No,
for pilgrims
no.
coming or no?
Well, pilgrims wouldn't particularly, because the Church of St. John is across the road, and the tower is the other
And what
side
was the importance of this place, though?
of the
Of this of Clondalkin
Oh,
itself. It was a scriptorium,
twas a
possibly a place of learning.
twas a monastic settlement, just like you have any place. Like Clonmacnoise was no place to
And
them.
that's where the village grew up around it
Yeah,
then.
they always did.
And the centerpiece being the round tower, which
The round tower would have been an integral part of it, but I would say the Christianity came here, and the monastic thing came here before the round tower. But the round tower has actually viewpoints north, south, east, and west in windows.
Well, they were put up really to look out for the Danes coming in, were they?
But the Danes didn't come till about 800, you see, about 832. The Danes came here and they destroyed various things and stole what they could. But the Irish got at them then, and they beheaded 100 of them and put them on spikes here.
The Irish did
The Irish did.
to the Danes.
In return, yeah. And there's a place called Doon Ollie here. It's Ollie's. He was a Dane. And the name is down there. But Doon Ollie is definitely up on the hill here. Because
What makes you think that?
you'd a total view of the whole thing. You'd never have a place built as a citadel down in a hole like out there. But I said that first time I saw it, I did archaeology in Galway myself. And I said, that's Doon Ollie. That couldn't be Doon Ollie down there. They might have could name it, but it wouldn't have been. But it could have been a battlefield down there and renamed it. You wouldn't know. That's what I say. It's very hard to get any certitude into the whole idea, other than what you'd find in documentation. And that's why these manuscripts are so important, like Clonmacnoise, you know, the Book of Kells and all these. And now you have this one here. Now, on the way down, actually, on the great road from Dublin to Galway, you meet a place, this from Kilbeggan into Tullamore, and there's a high place there in actual fact, and that's the monastic, the Book of Durrow, Columbar, Columbkill actually, you know, went from Durrow actually to Iona, you know that.
Yes,
It's
yes,
his
yes, yes.
dwelling now. He was Clonmacnoise is away down in County Offaly on the Shannon, and there was great connection between those and the big one in Durrow, the big the monastery in Durrow. Now, in 1183, you know, the Normans came over and they allocated, what is it, Henry II, allocated various, like De Lacy got Meath and De Burgo got Connacht, you know these. But De Lacy actually got Leinster. And he actually built all these castles around Leinster. And one of these actually was Columba's monastery. And he built his castle on there. And was shown actually was showing these pals of his who came from England. You had the Moreton Bailey and you had the dyke here, and he was showing
Norman castles.
these characters and the features
Yeah.
of the castles. And a fellow called Gilligan Gan Inaher, a fellow without entrails, came over. Belonged to the Kinclare people in Clare, about 3 miles away, and he took a big tour and knocked his head off. And that's a fact. And his head fell into the faucet. He was
Yes.
lazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a great Norman. He would have been King of Ireland, that man. And Henry II, well, you know that the murder in the cathedral
In Canterbury.
Canterbury.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't mean actually to. Henry II sent his men to get Thomas a Becket and shut him up, kind of. But he was in the cathedral, and some agents decided that they beat him to death, so they killed him there. You know that? They killed him in the cathedral, and the thing was written of murder in the cathedral. There was a huge amount of, Ireland's connected with a huge amount of activity and so on. But Henry II would have been delighted in a way, because he knew that your man, instead of being a henchman of his that he sent over and donated land to and all this kind of business, was he was like, they came more Irish than the Irish themselves, the Normans. Now, the Normans came to, the Normans actually, when Aoife married Strongbow in Waterford, you know the Mall in Waterford, do you know Waterford at all?
I do indeed.
The Mall, and the corner there's what you call Regina's Tower.
Yes, done by...
Built in the corner to build about a 10 or 3 it was. But after that, of course, the Normans came and Aoife married Strongbow. They came to Dublin after that, about 1171. They came, and they came to Clondalkin.
Why did they come here?
Well, that was the part they wanted to get to Dublin, you see.
And this would have been on the way.
This was on the way, and they built
a place to stay.
And so also... Did our friend from the High King of Ireland, what do we call him at the time, Rory O'Connor, he was the High King of Ireland, he billeted his troops as well. And O'Connor actually waited for the, he knew they were coming, and waited for them. But in the meantime, somebody gave the game away and told the Normans, and they got in backways into Dublin. I got in actually to Christ Church, which was a Catholic that time, of course. And St. Lawrence O'Toole, he was Archbishop of Dublin that time, the connection between. But he actually invited the Henry II, the Pope in Rome, actually through Henry II, actually got the Normans in here.
Yeah.
And Dermot MacMurrough invited them. You know that when he went up to Drumahair and he got Tiernan O'Rourke's wife and brought her down, had a child with her.
Ran over to England looking for help and brought
the Normans in. So they were set up here. But Lawrence O'Toole actually, before
Rory O'Connor knew.
Before Rory O'Connor knew, the boys had already gone into Dublin, and Lawrence O'Toole actually was saying that they'd Te Deum for them. In the church up there. They were Catholics, you see, from Canterbury. And even after that, although they were well known, actually, to be cutting the heads of young fellas down in Waterford, when they came up to Dublin, they saw the boys, same fellas, cutting the heads off kids here.
Yeah.
They were Christian and they were Catholic, but they never actually had their priests ordained here. They had to bring them to Canterbury, and they were independent of. There was always that kind of between. It was a huge area I should have been here a few years ago. Anyway, you're getting in bits.
Talk to me about some of the other place names around here that would have a meaning. And
a lot of them changed. They changed, actually, because the land here went into the possession of the Archbishop of Dublin. And that became Protestant Patrick's, remember?
Yeah.
And the other one, of course, now, you know, the church, the Christ Church on top of the hill, you know, the way in. They were actually, well, they were both Catholic churches, and they changed over. And when the break came here after Henry VIII, of course, in the 1530s, They changed their own men, and some of them, you know, took the oath of abjuration, and the Bible, you know, the New Bible. And we ran into Queen Anne's time, you know, about 1703, 1740, and she was written actually about her, actually the penal days, the real penal days, that she was drunk with the blood of priests. It's an awful thing, wasn't it? But all these, and you had this is rife through the island, and you had priest hunters, and you got so much for the head of a bishop and the head of a... The last...
Is this during the Reformation now?
Well, of course, that would have been the whole thing. It blew up from there, you know. But, you know, that was all Henry VIII. That was Henry VIII's thing, you know. Henry VIII actually was never a Protestant. He was a Catholic all the time. He thought he was. And people are, you know, and then you had the development in England where you had a whole lot of other religions.
But Joe, go back to the place names again. You know, you have Tala, for example. What does Tala, where are the origins of that name?
Táiv is a plague, and Lacht is a flag. And it's the flag of the plague. The crowd that came here, they couldn't be Milesian, I don't know what they were. They came as a crowd, just as they're coming now into Ireland. And that plague came along, and they all died of plague. And that's the origin of it. Táiv, Lacht, Lacht.
Is there any folklore about that then?
You know, loads of plague. There is, of course.
About but the what plague? Was it?
Oh, I don't. It was a plague. The local plague. Could have been anything. Yeah. Could have been a bad flu or like any plague. Don't mean plague. Should the Black Plague of England. You know.
And it wiped out all the...
Yeah, in 1660, and about the same time you had the Great Fire of London, you know, you've all the... And they got that because then you had a plague that was brought around by the Black Plague. There were fleas on rats, you know, and they got the blood of rats, fleas, and they onto humans after that, and the whole plague.
But... living here since the 1960s, long before an M50 or the roundabout,
there's only one road actually. Well, you had in Peter Duff's map, that was in 1703. He has actually coming in from Inchicore here, from the Naas Road. It's only one Naas Road there, it's a model old place. And you had three, you had a road going into Clondalkin, you had another going out actually through here, Commonage, which became actually a part of Cork Park, or the wet place up here. It's a big estate, you know, Cork at all.
Yeah. And it was very swampy up there, was it?
It was. But actually, the River Swift, or the River Camac, came right down from the Dublin Mountains and came right down here. And when that overflowed, of course, the place was. And you got sedimentary set up and all that, and they came into the village and down.